Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I'm joined by Joshua Spodek, astrophysicist turned leadership guru. He has a new book out this month called Leadership Step by Step. He believes you don't have to be a superhero to be a leader. We've heard that before, but a lot of books we read are about ideas. His book is about exercises you can put in place today to be a better leader tomorrow. Check it out. One thing I want to say too to the listeners, he talks about how having a coach or a mentor can sometimes be expensive. Have you considered joining one of my school leader masterminds? They're affordable. The value is incredible. And it's a place where you don't have to lead alone. I am encouraging you to reach out to me, Daniel, at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Send me an email. Let me know if I could get you more information and set up a 15-minute call to see if you're a right fit for the coaching experience. Enjoy the show. I never take you for granted. Thanks for listening. Well, hey, Better Leaders. We're here today with Joshua Spodek, who is an adjunct professor at NYU, leadership coach and workshop leader for Columbia Business School, columnist for Inc., founder of Spodek Academy, and author of Leadership Step by Step, which is out in February this month. He has led seminars in leadership, entrepreneurship, creativity, and sales at Harvard, Princeton, MIT, INSEAD in Singapore, the New York Academy of Science, and in private corporations. He holds 5 Ivy League degrees, including a PhD in astrophysics and an MBA, and studied under Nobel Prize winners. He helped build an X-ray observational satellite for NASA, co-founded and led as CEO or COO several ventures, and holds 6 patents. He earned praise as best and brightest from Esquire magazine's Genius issue, astrophysicist turned new media whiz from NBC, and rocket scientist from ABC News and Forbes. He's been quoted and profiled by ABC, CBS, NBC, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. He has visited North Korea twice, swam across the Hudson River, and has done burpees every day for 6 years and counting. He lives in Greenwich Village and blogs daily at joshuaspodek.com. And listeners, that's linked up for you in the show notes. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So I need to get my mind around how one moves from astrophysicist to leadership guru. What's the story there?
You know, I'm going to answer that. I'm going to put a little tinge of how things are for me now that I didn't really realize then. And because you realize stuff over time that you're not really aware of in the moment. So when I studied physics, when I first started studying it, I was pretty good at math and science. And I still love physics, actually. It's just, I realized that I didn't want to be a researcher anymore. Like, the life of a researcher was just not quite what I wanted to do. And I felt trapped at the time. I felt like I had to do something with my degree. So the standard things would be, I could, even though I didn't want to keep researching, I could still keep researching and maybe become a professor. I could go into like working in the industry and help professors, or maybe do something military industrial. I didn't want to do that. I could go to Wall Street and make a lot of money, but I definitely didn't want to do that. That was a culture I also didn't like. And so I felt trapped. And here's the thing. I had more education, and it made me feel like I had fewer options.
Yeah.
And that is the opposite of what an education is for. An education is not supposed to make you feel like you can't do anything. And so for me, I got lucky that some friends, we got together and we decided to start a company together. And I did not realize until much later that freed me. It gave, like, becoming an entrepreneur gave me the ability to take responsibility. And by taking initiative, I created new options that I didn't think I had before. And I really didn't plan it. I didn't predict it. I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship before that happened. And so that was a very lucky thing. And one of the things I teach is entrepreneurship, because it gives you the ability. For me, entrepreneurship is not Shark Tank. That is like this very dramatized version of something that is designed to get you to keep watching and get you to watch the next week and get you to buy the products that they advertise, but is not a realistic representation. And for me, entrepreneurship, what it at the foundation, it's about entrepreneurship. It's about responsibility, initiative, empathy, listening, attracting people to support you, things like that. And if you happen to get a venture-backed company going, great, that's one way to do it, but it's not the only way. I mean, you can organize a community around something. You can organize a nonprofit. You can be in a company and never leave that company, but just get the decision makers to recognize that you're doing something valuable and to give you ownership of that project without necessarily leaving the company.
So let's stick with entrepreneurship for a second. And you know, the audience, they're all mostly school leaders. They might be principals, assistant principals, potentially instructional coaches or teachers wanting to move up into a more formal leadership role. What you've learned through entrepreneurial pursuits in the courses you teach on entrepreneurship, like what type of mindset, what kind of skills do those folks have that could really, really benefit leaders in education as you see it from what you know?
Well, I'm not sure. I can't say for all the entrepreneurs out there, because a lot of them work in ways that aren't, some of them are like get rich quick, and that may work for them, but I don't think that's going to get you very far in education.
Right.
On the other hand, what I think works a lot is the big thing. A lot of people think you should start with an idea, but I find it much more effective to start with understanding unmet needs in the market that are not served. And that could be, I said it in a kind of business school way there, unmet needs in the market that are underserved, but it could be just what problems people have that if you were able to solve them, they would support you. They'd want you to keep doing that. And if you charge money, then they'd pay you for it. But it could be that that in order to get it done, they have to promote you, or in order to get it done, they have to give you responsibility and resources for you to make it happen. So if your primary way of getting ahead is to try to prove how great you are, that's not particularly entrepreneurial. People don't buy products because you're so awesome. They buy them because you solved their problem. So if you're able to communicate with people around you and behave in a way that they share with you their problems, because look, a lot of people don't share their problems. They protect their problems, especially if they're in a position of authority, because they feel like it might weaken that. So if you can behave in a way that they share with you their problems, and then you can figure out a way to solve that problem for them, they're going to tend to want you around. And that's the sort of stuff that I try to get across in the classes that I teach.
Right.
How to listen, how to make people feel comfortable sharing vulnerabilities, how to address the needs and involve them in the process of solving it. So you're not just saying like, you got a problem, here's a solution, but you got a problem, all right, let's understand it. Can you tell me more? How about if we did this? Oh, that doesn't work. How about if we did that? Oh, that works better. Okay, let's iterate.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, based on what I've read from you and, you know, these ideas of, right, really listening, being present there, the skill of empathy, creating safe places where you can even explore this stuff. Do you have any other tips or tricks for the listeners in terms of helping people remove those barriers to sharing the problems and really identifying the problems so you can get to that really, you know, just helpful conversation of solving them?
You know, the whole concept of helping someone, a lot of people, you may want to help someone, but it's really up to them. It's their values that are important. If I want to help you, I have to understand what the problem is from your perspective. I'm sure you've gotten a gift from someone and they bought you something and they really thought you'd like it, but it's not something that you really like.
It's a garbage can. I got a garbage can for Christmas from my uncle. It was Chicago Bears. They also gave me a laundry bag and I was like 12. Why would I want either of those gifts? So yes, I can relate.
So when you get a gift that you don't really want, you're in this awkward position of if you say thank you, then they might get you another one. Or someone else might say, oh, he likes garbage bags. Or garbage cans, whatever. I'm going to get him another one. And so you can't, if you say thank you, that's kind of messes things up. Now, if you say no thank you, that's kind of awkward because they thought that their intent was there. And so if you don't show some sort of appreciation, that's awkward. And so then maybe you do something as like, you say like, well, I appreciate the sentiment and that means a lot to me, but the actual physical thing, I hope you can take it back. And I don't mean to give it back, but really I can't. And then you get this weird, awkward, like, that's weird too. And maybe you can say it just perfectly, but I don't know how to say it in like less than a, you know, without it taking a long time. So you don't want to be, the thing there is the person who acted without finding out what you really needed first.
Right.
So, you know, the extreme case would be buying someone a puppy who doesn't want a puppy, because now you bought them 15 years of obligation. And if you try to help someone, but you don't really know what the problem is, and you don't know what a successful solution would be like for them, you run the risk of giving them a puppy or something, a garbage can that they don't want. And now they're kind of stuck with it. And that, so the upshot of this is to put the other person's interests before yours. In leadership, that's a very important thing. It's if I try to get you to do what I want you to do, that's not going to be as effective if I get you to do what you wanted to do already. And in leadership, it's you're giving someone a task, but you're enabling them to do what they wanted to do. Like Martin Luther King didn't get people to do what he wanted them to do. He got them to do what they wanted to do. He just figured out how to make it possible. So that concept of putting the other person's interests before your own and serving those needs is, I think, if there's any core of it, I mean, there's more than one core, but that's one of the big ones.
Yeah, that's huge. Put the other people's interests before their own. And I love that metaphor, too, of the puppy, garbage can. So I said, I got the laundry bag. Guess what else? Gifts, just really quick. I know it's about you, but I got soap from this uncle and aunt. Huh? And I'm a kid, all right? So it's not like I'm an adult. I got socks. You got all the classic bad gifts. One year, I finally got a video game. I was so excited. It was for the Sega system, and it was like the absolute worst video game you could ever get. It's just I never had any luck with them. You know, it's just it happens sometimes.
Well, the big lesson there, I mean, there's lots of lessons, but the big lesson for me is don't be the person who gives gifts that people don't like.
Right.
And
right,
the way
right.
out is to listen and ask and try not to surprise people. You know, it's a lot of working with them and working with them to create the solution. If you listen and you're like, oh, now I know your problem. I'm going to come back tomorrow. I'll give you a solution. It's more like I find it much more effective to involve them in the process and to iterate.
Exactly.
Together.
That's beautiful. So needless to say, my aunt and uncle, they're not going to get one of those gratitude emails you wrote. And while I was stalking you on Twitter, I don't know if you posted it, somebody retweeted it, but I found that article was fascinating. You wrote over 70 gratitude emails. And can you unpack for the listeners a little bit why you did it and what you learned?
Well, you know, the reason I started to do it years ago, 10, 15 years ago, it was the first time I heard of a gratitude exercise. And it was a professor of mine at business school, Srikumar Rao. And he was just saying, and I've seen this from lots of different places, it was, you know, before you go to sleep at night, think of three things you're grateful for and write them down. And I don't know if I maybe did it once or twice. I didn't really think much of it. And I thought over the years, I've heard lots of people give different variations on writing lists of things you're grateful for. And everyone's always said it was effective. And I never really did it until I had a big self-interest in it, which is that a friend of mine teaches this leadership course and he had a guest speaker, this guy, Joe Polish.
And
so he's very successful. And I was like, oh, I want to meet this guy. I want to get to know him more than just listening to him talk in my friend's class. And so in the course of the class, he said his version of the exercise was to write 10 emails expressing your gratitude every day for a week to a different person with each email. So I thought, oh, I've been meaning to do this for a long time. Oh, and he added, if you do it and write me through the professor, through my friend, then I will give you access to my marketing course because he's a marketer. And I thought, oh, cool. So I'm gonna get closer to this guy. I'm gonna get this free marketing thing and I'm gonna get the benefits of the course. So it all fit together. It happened to be that I was traveling that week. So it took me longer than a week to do because it turns out that the first few that you write are pretty quick. You think of the very important people in your life and you think of the gratitude you feel toward them. And you even realize you don't have to do a completely different email each time. It's usually the same introduction, the same close. But then after the first few, it gets really hard. Like some people you feel gratitude toward, but you also are angry at. And I was like, how do I balance this? And I realized, all right, some of the people that you learn the most in life from are really annoying people. And so you feel gratitude toward them for helping you grow and learn.
Yeah.
But it's also because they were annoying. So how do you express this? And so you have to look inside yourself and understand, what am I trying to do here? What am I trying to communicate here? What is this person's value to me? What's my value to them? How do I say this? And so it's funny, you said, why did I do it? And the beginning was one thing. The middle was another. The middle was more of getting into the more challenging, nuanced relationships of someone who was difficult to deal with, but it made you a better person for your interacting with them. And then towards the end, you start a few things of like, it starts taking a long time because people start writing me back before I finish writing everyone else. And now I got to respond to those emails. And so this thing that I thought would be not fast, but not long was like, I'm months into it. Wow. And I realized like, I got to stop at some point. I can't keep writing more people. So now I have to triage, like, who am I going to not include? And then some people are like, who do I like? Anyway, it's all this examination of your values. How do you express what you feel about someone? How do you swallow your pride when someone is hard to thank, but nonetheless deserves to be on the list and that you feel deserves to be on the list? And then when people start writing back, some people wrote back these very touching, heartfelt messages. And I was like, I didn't sign up for this, but I'm really glad it's happening. And some of them are really long. And then you start going into your feelings back to them. And I'm in New York City. You can hear the.
It's all good. I used to record in Chicago, so this is par for the course.
So it's the writing the emails. You're expressing yourself in new ways. You're exploring yourself. People are writing back, and some of these connections, I get the email back. I'm like, oh, this is great. You think in this Machiavellian way. I'm going to get a lot out of this person because they're so happy that I wrote them, and you feel kind of bad, but then you realize, oh, they're going to like it. So lots of different things going on, and. Nice, you know, zero cost, didn't pay a penny for any of this. And some of the plane flights when I was traveling were, you know, I didn't get to write as many as I wanted to, but the time passes because you're just like exploring your mind and your heart. Was that too long of an answer?
No, it was a perfect answer. I think it's a valuable exercise, you know, to explore. So again, listeners, we're going to have that linked up, the article we referred to here. And maybe it's a challenge, a little Better Leader challenge. To think about, you know, who you need to thank and to go through this exercise and explore your inner self as well, just like Joshua did. So, no, appreciate the response a lot. So I know you have Leadership Step-by-Step. It's we're releasing this episode. It's February. The book's out in February. And I encourage all the listeners to pick that up. It's also linked in the show notes. But, you know, we had a really interesting discussion prior to recording here. And you were talking about how leadership could really be taught. And I was really interested, too, in your take in terms of when you go into a bookstore, you said, and you pick up a new leadership book, right? And if it isn't one that you've seen before, you start flipping through it, and your book's trying to be different. So can you describe to the listeners how Leadership Step-by-Step is different, why they should grab a copy of your new book?
Okay, I want to clarify that my goal is not to be different. My goal is to be effective. And it turns out that I think that forced me to do something that I didn't see out there.
Gotcha.
But I'm not trying to be unique. I'm not trying to be, you know, my success is in the success of the readers. And that's the whole thing is written to get people to do the exercises in the book and not just read it. I'm sure a lot of people will just read the book and they'll get something out of it. But the people who recognize that it's a set of exercises that take you from the beginning early steps of actually, it'd be advanced for some people too, but it takes you from early, and then the first exercises anyone can do, you'll learn and grow from them. And then they give you access to the next exercises, which are a little more challenging, but also more applicable and more useful. And it's a lot like learning the skills or mastery of playing a musical instrument or learning how to act or learning how to sing or to dance. You know, at the beginning, you learn footwork, or if you're learning to play the piano, I don't think any teacher teaches piano by starting by saying, all right, I'm going to lecture you for a year on musical theory. I'm going to teach you about perfect fifths and harmonics and things like that. You begin with scales. And scales didn't come out of nowhere. It took a long time for people to develop them. But instead of lecturing theory at you, you give someone an exercise that has theory in it. You know, the scales aren't just hitting random keys on a keyboard. It's hitting certain keys in a certain way in order to develop certain skills and certain understanding of what is going on underneath the music, what the theory is. And so effective teaching in fields that are like this, that are active and social and expressive and emotional and performance-based, it's not the role of the teacher is you got to know the theory, but you have to be able to give someone an experience that they discover it for themselves through doing it. That's what works. And in all these fields, like music and dance and so forth, they're very expressive, and people, they reach a genuineness and an authenticity that a lot of leaders only dream of reaching. And if you can't lecture authenticity into someone. You can't read to get integrity. You have to do things. And so what you talked about, what we were saying before about the bookstores, is that whenever I read a lot of leadership books, and at the beginning I learned a lot of interesting principles, but that didn't help me lead. And as I learned more, a friend of mine is the founding principal of a project-based learning school, and is visiting that school and recognizing that what you teach is not all there is to it. It's how you teach. And I realized that how I had learned this stuff, how people had taught it to me, was not completely ineffective, but it didn't teach me how to lead. And so I started looking at all these resources. Are these resources getting me to behave and change my behavior and learning how to do things actively? And I have not found a single book or video or MOOC or course. The one thing I found is one-on-one coaches. There's a lot of one-on-one coaches who are very effective at this, but there's not a whole lot of coaches around, and it's really expensive. So you can get custom stuff. And I should say that some really top corporations have some great corporate training, but again, that's very limited. You know, you have to be in those corporations. And even then you have this weird agency issue that the corporation is paying the teacher, not the individual who's learning. So, you know, the teacher is beholden partly to the person they're teaching, but partly to who's paying the bills or paying the check. So that it's not like I was like, I got to write a book. I really want to write a book. It's I felt compelled that what I found worked in my friend's school. And as I learned more about the community that, you know, he didn't come out of nowhere. That's like going back to John Dewey, Montessori and people like that, that there's stuff that really works effectively. And not just, and that's in one direction in the fields of these active social fields, like acting and singing and dance. There's a long tradition that's very effective there too. And over the years, as I taught and coached, I was able to synthesize these different ways of teaching and apply them to leadership and entrepreneurship that I just didn't see any resources that did it. And my clients and my students were like, you got to get this stuff out there. And so the book emerged from what I saw as an utter lack in the market of a very effective way of teaching that's very effective in other areas that are a lot like leadership, but not in leadership. I keep giving you these really long answers.
No, that's good. These are meaty answers. So this is what the listeners come to the podcast for. And I think people are really going to be excited to pick up Leadership Step by Step and you know, dig into these exercises. They want the hands-on practical experiences. And you said that your friend founded this project-based learning school. You saw these exercises help him grow as a leader, if I heard you correctly. I'm curious, you know, is there an exercise or an idea that you could share with the listeners just to get them excited about, you know, kind of your approach to leadership?
Well, I want to clarify that it went the other way with a friend. I've known him for a long time, and I knew him before when he was a school teacher, a teacher, and he was offered the opportunity to be the founding principal of a school, which he did. And at the time, as a friend, I was like, okay, you don't give tests, you do performance-based assessments. Okay, that's kind of neat, but I didn't really care that much because I wasn't doing education at the time. I was doing my entrepreneurial stuff, starting businesses in other areas. And only when I started teaching did I start picking up on like, what? That's interesting. Now that I'm giving tests, like, what did he do? And I started learning more about what he did. So I learned a lot from him. It was all one direction.
Gotcha.
It was me learning from him.
Gotcha.
And he, you know, he had a master's in education, and he's deeply passionate about this. He's one of the most biggest influences on me. It's Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
But oh, I'm going to be looking that up for sure.
Yeah, and I recommend, well, the people listening to this, they just missed it, but in late January every year, he's got EduCon, and it's when people get together, and it's mostly K-12 inquiry-driven, project-based learning style teachers who come to this. It's not commercial. It's not like a trade show. It's really of, by, and for educators. And so I'll tell you a story about when I was teaching an entrepreneurship class at NYU, and it's January a few years ago, and my course starts on Wednesday. And this EduCon is the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday just before that. And so you can imagine that it's a couple days before class. I've basically written my syllabus, you know, fine-tuning a little bit, but I know what I'm going to teach. And so this is my first time really immersing myself in this community. And so everyone around me is very deeply into project-based learning and active learning, experiential learning, and all this stuff that I never heard of that I just barely heard of in practice from my friend. And on Friday, I take a tour of the school because Friday the school is in session and you're allowed to, it's designed so that you can watch, like you can go into the classrooms and they're fine with that for this one particular day. And so I go around and I start seeing how it operates and I start seeing that this is probably a more effective way of learning than lecturing for what I'm teaching. So after Friday, reflecting on what I saw that day, I think to myself, maybe I should do this myself. I mean, it's kind of last minute, but maybe I can change my syllabus. And so Saturday and Sunday, it was like a project-based learning project. You know, I was like, I'm going to redo my syllabus. And I have all these resources around me, all these people who are very experienced at it. I'm going to learn as much as I can and try to redo it as quick as I can so that I can learn from them. They can tell me what I'm getting wrong and what I'm doing effectively and so forth. And so I'd say, how about this? And someone would say, well, try it that way. And I'd be like, oh, I get it. And I'd say, what about that? And they'd say, well, try it this way. And by the end of Sunday, I had rewritten my syllabus from scratch and I had to refine it on Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday I taught. And that semester I ended up getting almost the highest reviews from students in the entire school.
What?
And I'm the same person. So it was really, I can't take credit for that. It was the style of teaching. And, you know, there was no going back from that point. And so that put me on track toward, you know, that class went really well, but I still had a lot to learn and I still have a lot to learn. So I'm still trying to incorporate more and more stuff all the time and learn different ways of doing things. And I don't know. I don't know if it sounds to me like the way I was doing that is also I teach people to do that similarly. Is find a pro I gear people toward, I give them enough basics that they can do something. And then I get them connected to something in their lives that they care about. And now they can apply what they learned. And I'm there as a resource at this point, but they're generally impassioned and they want to do, in the case of leadership, the project will be to find something in their life where they need to take at least one other person. They need to motivate at least one other person to achieve some goal. But it's something they care about. And it's something that the other person cares about, and they start leading. And it's something they want to get done. And if they don't get it done, they're accountable in some way, generally for their own emotional, what they care about. And in entrepreneurship, it's more of something, a project that's not a leadership project. It may be a leadership project, but it's generally something that is going to lead to solving someone else's problem. And in a way that overlaps with the passion of theirs as well. So that they're doing something that others value and that they like doing. So it took me a long time to set up how to create enough skills on their part to do something new and enough direction for them to find something that is meaningful to them without me giving them all the answers, so that when they start doing the project, they're not doing it for me or for the grade. They're doing it because they care about the outcome and they want to make it happen. And they have a team that's working with them that's depending on them, and that they also depend on the others. I don't know if that's too vague or specific enough.
No, I think it is specific. I mean, it's fascinating just to hear how that impacted you. And I have friends that teach, you know, different university level courses, and I can't even imagine rewriting all this stuff, you know, right before the class starts in terms of your syllabus and redesigning the course, and then doing it in a way that makes it very rigorous and relevant to your students in terms of project-based learning. I think that was quite a fascinating story. Definitely,
it's not like I tried to do that. It was, you know, I really was passionate about teaching, but I didn't know about that there are other more effective ways of doing it. And once I came on them, I was swept up by it. I couldn't, you know, and a lot of people describe it that way. And it's for my goals, it's simply more effective. It's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, you know, sometimes you're trying to build something and you have an old tool and it turns out there's a new tool that's been invented since then. And the new one is more effective. It's like, you don't use the old tool anymore.
Right, right.
I mean, maybe use it sometimes. But if you have I'm trying to think of an example of something where I used to do something and it was really hard, and then now I do it and it's easy. I don't know. You know, I just don't use film cameras anymore. I use digital cameras. But what I do, it's just, you know, I don't have to send the film away to be developed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't have to wait a week and take only 24 pictures at a time.
Get instant results. You can see, you know, did you capture the right type of lighting, or, you know, did you get the exact frame shot that you wanted? So yeah, that makes sense. And it's neat that you were just swept up in the passion of it too. Cause coming from my side of it, trying to introduce project-based learning to teachers can often be a very scary process. It's different. It's the old camera. You know, that where you get the film developed, it's traditional. It's the way we always have done it. And so when you give them the new iPhone 7 and they're looking at it, and how do I take pictures with it? It's a really scary voyage for them to go on, for sure.
Yeah, for me, there was a big issue that there are a few concepts that took me a while to get. One of them was that, I don't know how other people look at this, but it at one point I realized, and people may disagree with me on this, but tests are generally for the teacher and the administration at the expense of the student's time. Like a test, testing, you know, all this, there's so much testing, and it makes sense from an outside perspective that the goal of teaching is to get the students to learn more. The test how well the students are learning, and we want to hold the teachers accountable. So if the test scores go up, then we know the teacher's effective. It makes a lot of sense. It seems internally consistent. And in practice, it doesn't work that well. Because you start teaching the test and it starts being about test scores, and you start squeezing out some of the things that are most important to learn, like art and sports and gym. And these things are incredibly important. For me, so much of what I teach is based in how we teach art but you know, I don't know, maybe is there an AP test in art? I don't know if it's probably an art history. Is it an art history or is it the practice of making art?
Both. You can do art history. You can do photography, three-dimensional stuff, two-dimensional stuff, and they're doing portfolios of work at that point.
Huh, that's interesting. I wouldn't know how they would do that, but what I found is that how to teach art, I mean, to get people to practice something that's expressive and where you get judged, and so you have to put yourself out there and be able to withstand and people seeing things differently than you wanted it to be, that's really important. And anyway, so this model of testing, it makes sense, and definitely, you know, from an outside perspective, as someone with an MBA, you look at that and you're like, oh, well, got to hold someone accountable. You know, in in the business world, we want things to be profitable. So in educational world, we want test scores to go up. But my friend had such, when I visited his school, it was such a tremendous learning environment. And they don't, I mean, they give tests here and there, but really it's not the focus of what they do. And they get a lot of, he works hard to get protection from the Department of Education in order to teach less to the test and the students learn more. So, you know, in physics, we have a very strong philosophy, a very strong way of looking at things, that if you measure something, if you predict something, no matter how beautiful your prediction, no matter how beautiful your theory, if nature behaves differently, you throw out the theory. It's wrong.
Exactly.
Like, nature's right.
Right.
And if you predict something and it doesn't go out that way, you got to drop that theory. And in so many other areas, it's like they keep the theory and they try to change the people. I'm like, I don't look at it that way. I think if people learn one way, it doesn't matter how much you want them to learn a different way. You got to go with what actually works, not what you think should work if it doesn't work.
Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free year-round fundraising program for schools. And believe it or not, their CEO and founder, Matt Miller, was a guest on episode 5 of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. He can increase your school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. There's no upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. It's absolutely free to you, the school. If you're sick of the same old ways of raising money, check out School Spirit Vending at schoolspiritvending.com. So I'd love to ask you this question. I ask all my guests it. What would you consider your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
It's like, take a pick. I got like a lot of them. I can tell you, I mean, one of the big things was that when before I got any of this sense of putting other people's interests first and you know, spending time understanding what their interests were, I think a leader works with other people's motivations a lot. I was command and control style. Do this, do that. And here's how we'll get through this crisis. You do this, you do that, you do this, you do this, I'll do that, and then we'll get through. And people don't like being told what to do, especially when you're in times of crisis. And especially when I was like a CEO in my 20s, I'm telling people who are seemingly more experienced than me what to do. And they've been been through a recession before and I haven't. So treating people as if they're tools that I can just pick up and use when I need them and put away when I don't, I think alienated people. And I think when your company is in difficult times and you behave like that, I think they just, all it does is get them to send their resumes out faster to look at their work somewhere else. And so when I talk about putting other people's interests first, it comes from experience of seeing what happens when you don't. I got squeezed out of my own company and that was a very painful experience. And what I learned is it's much more effective to lead people when you understand what their interests are and what their motivations were before they ever met you and how you can help them achieve those goals while doing the team task.
So getting pushed out, was that the aha moment for you or were you still on a journey afterward?
Oh man, there was no ahas going on then. That was like...
Too young for that.
You have to process it. It's very painful. I was crying at work.
Yeah,
there was a day when the other co-founder and I were fighting and the rest of the people on the team were trying to send us a signal that they wanted us to pay attention to their concerns, you know, put their interests on the table. And so they picked one particular day when they all got together separately before and they said, we're not going to go in this one particular day. And they didn't tell us. And so I was the only one in the offices one day and I was like, no one came in. And
wow.
I felt very, very helpless. And I felt like years and years of work. And now I've absolutely nothing to show for it, like an empty room.
Ouch. Yeah.
And I can't put into words how that feels. I hope people listening to this never have to go through that. And I'm saying it kind of like it's a learning experience now, but I can tell you it's not like at a moment like that, you're like, now I know it'll do better next time.
Yeah.
That comes after the intensity of the emotions goes away and you can reflect. And, you know, there's a lot of, you got to talk to people who have been through that before and you need mentors and people to make sense of it. Help you make sense of it.
Yeah. Mentors, coaches, and man, time to really, really process. Joshua, thanks for sharing that story, you know, and being vulnerable. That I can sense, you know, how painful that was. So I appreciate you sharing that with our listeners.
Anytime, he says, tears streaming down his face.
Hey, Joshua, besides Leadership Step-by-Step, what's one book every principal you think should read right now?
So there's a couple books that are really great. I mean, it's hard to pick one. I'll start with one. Getting to Yes is a book on negotiation And it was my main book that transformed me from looking at the business world as something that was cold-hearted, profit-driven, and inhuman into seeing it as human and based in relationships and listening and things like that. And before that, I thought negotiation was about winning and, you know, like the more you learn about the other person, the more you could get from them. And you try to hide information from them. And there are negotiations when it gets like that. But that book talks about building the pie, like increasing the pie and separating the people from the problem and being able to, like, you want the other person to negotiate this way also so you can make better deals. And, you know, probably an overwhelming majority of people who have learned negotiation and learned business have read that book. I don't know how many people read it, but a lot of people have.
Yeah,
it was a real game changer for me. It made business much more compassionate for me.
We'll link that up in the show notes for people. I saw William Ury speak once at a leadership conference, and after that, I was hooked. So I bought his book and read it right away.
Cool. Yeah, it's the book that I've given away more than any other book, just because I'll be talking to someone, I'm like, here, take it. And then I just,
you need this.
Yeah.
Awesome. Joshua, what do you do for fun besides burpees?
Burpees are less, I wouldn't describe the burpees as fun.
How many do you do? This is a side question. I have to cut you off. I apologize. How many do you do? You do these and for every day for 6 years, I think I read. How many do you do?
Yeah. It began with 10 a day. And okay. Then every time, after a while, 10 is not as hard as it once was. So I go to 11. And then that's not as hard as it once was. And it's 12. And then at one point, I did one set in the morning, one set in the evening. So I doubled at one point. And now I do 26 in the morning and 26 in the evening. Although recently, I have started doing diamond push-ups sometimes. And they're harder than regular push-ups because you put your hands closer together and it works. It's harder for your muscles because of the leverage. So when I do the diamond push-ups, I do 21 instead of 26. And then I do stretches and ab stuff and shoulder stuff. And so it's like when I do them now, it's under 10 minutes, but it's a pretty solid 10 minutes of intense exercise. And getting back to what I do for fun, I signed the book contract with my publisher almost exactly a year ago. And I can't describe writing or doing the marketing as fun, but it's tremendously rewarding. It's actually, and sometimes like the opposite of fun, in the way that like when I played sports, sometimes an injury made it more intense, more like when you win and you're injured, it's better than a cakewalk if the other team doesn't play very well. So the past year has been a lot less of going out and doing fun things than usual, but the reward is just, it's, you know, a week and a half ago, I got the hardcovers, the advanced copies for me, and to hold that in my hand has felt really good. Today, I got an email from the publisher to say that Booklist gave a starred review, so that's kind of like an unexpected bounty, you know, really cool thing. You know what?
Yeah.
I just realized what I love to do for fun is, I don't know if you've read my blog post on cooking, and in the past maybe 2 years, I've gotten into going to farmers markets and almost exclusively getting fresh fruits and vegetables. Oh, and I get legumes from the bulk food store near me and just cooking all from scratch. And like the soup that I had earlier today was split pea, kale. There was some pumpkin, jalapeno, onion.
Wow.
And just really delicious.
Hearty and delicious. It sounds incredible.
Like, I can't believe it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I got to get out to Greenwich Village and get me some of that soup. That sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in New York, come by. I'll make you some soup.
Thank you. Joshua, what do you think was your favorite toy when you were 12?
12. So 12 would be sixth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
Sixth grade, seventh grade.
Yep.
So I had not yet gotten, at one point I got a personal computer. Maybe it was that VIC-20 computer, which had like 5K of memory. I probably grew out of my sled. At the end of the block where at my dad's house was what I hold to this day. It was the best sledding hill in the world. And me and my friend used to sled so much that the sled broke, and then I like got some wood and drill and, you know, put the sled back together again. And then I felt like, good, now it's even more solid. I can ride it even harder. So maybe I'll go with that flexible flyer.
Love it. And what message would you put on all school marquees if you could do that for one day across the whole nation?
Wait, a marquee? Like I think of like the things out in front of a movie theater. Do they have on schools?
Yeah, well, the signage, they might have like a rotating type of message, you know, for parents and students to read. But what would you want that message to say that the whole community, the school community would see just for one day?
That's tough. There's a lot of things that it could be. I mean, the first thing that came to mind was practice, practice, practice. The old punchline for how do you get to Carnegie Hall. And the thing is that for what I teach, that's very effective. I'm not sure if that's everything. I don't know. I'll stick with practice, practice, practice for now, and then I'll email you if I come up with something better.
Go with your gut. I like it. Practice, practice, practice. Hey, Joshua, you made it. This is the last question. It's you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities building this school?
Oh, without question, I would go to schools that are effective and work successfully. So my first thought is Science Leadership Academy, because I've spent so much time there and I've learned so much from them. And I know that they're not the only ones. So I would go to other schools. And the movie most likely to succeed is, I found them. I loved that movie, the documentary. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but if you haven't, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
And at the end, they say, we picked this one particular school. So they looked at High Tech High a lot. But they said that was just one, so they could get into more depth. But at the end, they scroll up all these different schools, and I'd like to go to all of them. So I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I want to do what works. So the main thing is go to places and look at them and see what works. Then I'd also want to get some of those people to come and visit my school. So I'd want them to visit where I am. And then I'd have to spend a lot of time with the entire families, the students and the parents who would be there. And, you know, every community is unique, no matter where you are in the world. You know, every city, town, neighborhood, whatever, they're all different. And so I'd have to learn what's my community like. So the three things, I guess, I'd visit other places that work. I'd get people from those places that work to come to visit and mentor me. And then I would talk to the teacher, or the parents and the students in that community, presumably the ones who would end up coming to my school. And I don't think any of this stuff is particularly budget heavy. There'd be some travel budget.
Sure, but you can make it work.
I'm not buying. Yeah. And, you know, Science Leadership Academy is the school, or the building already existed, so they didn't have to build anything. I probably would, well, I don't know. Now I'm getting into details of, like, am I building the school? Or am I using the building that's there?
Yeah. Love it. Love how your mind works. This is great. Hey, Joshua, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So parting words of advice is, nothing that any great leader has done that you can't do yourself. There's no one who is inhuman or superhuman. They all have skills, whether it's Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela or Gandhi or whoever, you know, whatever style. Maybe you're more into, like, an Elon Musk or a, I don't know, pick a president, Abraham Lincoln. They're all human. And what differentiates them from you is just practice and developing skills through experience. And so the big thing to me is, don't look at it, if there's someone who does something that you don't think you can do, it's not because they're somehow inherently more capable than you. They've done something that taught them something. And if you get a similar experience, you'll be able to do that too. So look at them not as different, but as possibly more experienced. Just figure out how to get that, some relevant experience yourself. To reach me, the main place is on the site where my, you know, you mentioned the book Leadership Step by Step. There's also the course Leadership Step by Step, which is, you know, the book has everything you need. And for people who are very diligent and very disciplined, they can do all the exercises in the book alone. But people who want a little bit more structure, and also who want an online community so that they're doing it with other people, there's the online version. And the online version has, you get to post your results and get to see all the results of all the other people. And people start communicating with each other on the message board. And it's kind of neat. They met each other in real life. People who met each other, this interacted with each other on my board. So that's at spodekacademy.com. So my last name is S-P-O-D-E-K, academy.com. And then my regular site is, or my personal blog site is joshuaspodek.com. And then the social media stuff is on Twitter, on Spodek. No, J Spodek on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so my first initial J, J-S-P-O-D-E-K, J Spodek. And I don't know, it's pretty easy to find me if you just plug in Spodek. There's not many Spodeks in the world. But Spodek Academy and joshuaspodek.com are the big places.
And listeners, you know, all that will be listed for you in the show notes, so you can just click the link, follow Joshua on Twitter. I do. Check out his Leadership Academy. Get the book. It's out in February this month. So all those links are there for you. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Joshua. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Joshua in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. And like I said, you'll get highlights of the episode and links to all the resources and the best ways to connect. And better leaders, don't forget that life is 10%. 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Joshua. Joshua, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine. I hope I didn't talk too much.
Not at all. You're a great guest. I appreciate it. Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.